need to correlate that question with what you're saying.
Yes.
I practice, or I have many times practiced, Native American spiritual religion, spirituality, and in that method of praying, we say there's a concept of sacred intent. And with sacred intent, we're not necessarily chanting or praying. We're just everything we do, whether it's sweeping the floor, is all for God.
Yeah, that's now, that's our principles. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's our philosophy.
Okay, all right, good.
Yeah, and we don't make a distinction in terms of well, this is for God and this is for me.
Right.
Yeah, that is bhakti. Krishna says in Gita, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you give away, all charity, everything should be done as an offering to me. That's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita.
Okay, so it's the same concept.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So 9 is detachment. Detachment from the thoughts of the mind. Okay, 5. 6 is, here we go. This one again, neglect the mind. Did we talk about 6? Neglect the mind? Okay. Don't take your mind seriously. Don't trust it. Bhakti Siddhanta says, never trust your mind. Always distrust. He says, your mind is a non-devotee. If you associate with a non-devotee, that's against the principles. We're supposed to associate with devotees. So what does that mean? That means you have to make your mind a devotee. You can't associate with your mind. You have to make your mind Krishna conscious. So therefore, you're in charge, not him. But he thinks he's in charge. That's the problem. Yes?
Well, I was just going to say, there's a slogan about, mind is a terrible thing to waste, or just in relation to what you were saying, is that the mind should just be cast off, or you should be in control of your mind instead.
Yeah. You need your mind to work with. It's like if you want to do some computer work, you need the computer. But you're not the computer. If the computer crashes, you can't do your work, but you're still there. So in the same way, if your mind doesn't function, you can't do your work, but you still exist. But you have to make your mind friend. That's the idea. Make the mind a friend. Not that you make a bargain with him. You could sometimes do that. If you're too heavy with your mind, he'll react. You have to know how to be like what we say, consistent but sweet. You can sweet talk your mind too. You talk to it. Just chant 16 rounds nicely. I promise you. Really, I really promise you, I'll give you some ice cream. Oh, really? You will? Okay. Well, he says, all right, thank you. That's a great idea. What flavor? Well, you choose mine. Okay, thank you. And then it's very, okay, I'll check myself. See, I have to sweet talk the mind sometimes. Yeah.
Do you have to uphold those vows that you make to your mind?
Not really. It's like the carrot and the donkey. The washerman who uses the donkey to carry the load by putting the carrot in front of his face. And he carries the whole load, and then when he gets to the end, the washerman eats the carrot anyway. Doesn't give it to the donkey. Yes?
That's how my mother told me to get me to go to school because I didn't want to go to school. She said, hey, come, we're getting ice cream. So we go there, and it's a school. She's like, get out and go. What's going on? You kind to apply this trick. You know it's false.
Okay, great.
One of the things is the mind likes to judge others and criticize others. That's in Bhakti, what is it? Lord Chaitanya says, by becoming judgmental and critical of others, one is actually working against one's own best interest. It just takes away from the important things, and at the same time, it's usually always wrong. Even if we're doing good, we're criticizing somebody else who's in a lesser position. If we're not doing good, we're criticizing someone else for being, you know, there's always some reason. Not criticizing, but judging. Judging or comparing. Sometimes we like to compare ourselves with others. That's another form of judgment. Just be yourself. Krishna likes you the way you are. Don't try to be somebody else or, you know, judge others. This judgmental mentality, which can lead to offensive mentality, is one of the ways we destroy our spiritual practice. Fast. That's why he says in the 11th canto, one should not praise another, one should not criticize another. But then he gives a sub-injunction that one can praise. But why does it say that first, one should not praise one? Because praise and criticism are always wrong. Because you can't see the whole picture. So you just get part of the picture, therefore you praise. And if you criticize, you're also seeing only a part of the picture. So it says don't. But because Vaishnava culture is to glorify and to praise others, and then it says yes, you can do that. But you should know it's always not correct. You know? So that's from the 11th canto, 28th chapter,
second verse.
Yeah, first and second verse.
Yeah, first and second.
So you know that verse.
Yeah, it's a parasa bhav karmani ya pashan sati nindati sa brashyate ashuvarta. Asati abhiniveshata.
Can you read the translation?
Yes. Whoever indulges in praising or criticizing the qualities and behavior of others will quickly become deviated from his own best interest by his entanglement in illusory dualities.
Mm. Yeah, illusionary dualities. And then verse number, does it give the sub-injunction of praising?
Maybe purport might have more.
I think so.
It's actually, purport is clarifying that praising and criticizing other materialistic people. So when you are criticizing other people on basis of their material nature, mm-hmm. because materially one might be good, but I mean
from another point of view,
but it's material, but it's all temporary, it's all fleeting. So mm-hmm. so such praise and criticism has no meaning or
no value. Right.
No value.
Exactly. It's in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 1 and 2, right?
1 and 2 of 28th chapter of 11th canto.
Mm. You familiar with Bhagavatam?
I've heard a lot growing up, and only more recently am I starting to dive into
reading. Yeah, you can ask the devotees, they can help you.
Yeah.
Okay. Says, we mentioned that earlier, that one verse from the 5th canto, 11th chapter, verse 17, Prabhupada says, one good way to control the mind is learn how to neglect it. And especially during japa. Just neglect it, that's all. It's got so many things. Neglect it. It wants to do something, just tell it later. That's all. After a while. Because sometimes, you know, you come up with some thoughts and you think it's a real good idea while you're chanting, and then when you're done chanting, you realize, it's not so good. Or it's not the way you thought of it. That's the nature of the mind. So learn how to neglect the mind. Especially if you want, it's japa meditation. So meditation means three things: concentration, absorption, and what we say deep concentration or samadhi. Samadhi means absorption in the name. When one, the name, it's only you and the name, that's all. So you can come to that stage of chanting if through the practice of devotional service, by following the principles, and by seriously every day chanting the Hare Krishna. Because the holy name is merciful. There's no more merciful incarnation in this age than the holy name. Kali Kale Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar Nama Vaite Haya Sarva Jagat Vistara. It's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. That Krishna has actually manifested himself in the form of the name. Name and Nama and Nami. Nami is name, and Nama and Nami, he who is named in the name. But he who is named is less merciful than the name. The name is more merciful than the person being named. They're both the same person. So how's that? Is that Krishna extends his mercy in his manifestation of the name more mercifully than he does in any other of his aspects of the Absolute Truth.
Or we can say the name is accessible to us first, and then Krishna becomes accessible through the name.
Exactly. Yeah, but if you commit an offense, yeah, of course your point is well taken. If you commit an offense, the only way you can get rid of that offense or free from the reactions of that offense is you have to chant the name. Except Vaishnava Parad. If you commit offenses to Vaishnava, even the name can't help you. Because only apologies, humble apologies to the Vaishnava that you offended, and sincere repentance can free you from the reaction of Vaishnava. It's the most serious of all offenses. And if one is consistently offending Vaishnavas and chanting the holy name will drive the person away from devotees' association. Because Krishna will not allow that to go on. Yes?
Yes, regarding that, I read in the Madhurya Kadambini, that statement. It was saying that when we offend the Vaishnava, then yes, and even Krishna cannot forgive or doesn't. He said, if we approach the Vaishnava with humility, he's very forgiving, so immediately he'll forgive. But it said, but there was some statement I'm asking. If for some reason the Vaishnava doesn't forgive, it said, then just take shelter of the holy name, and after some time you will be forgiven. That's
because you went through, you actually went through the process, right? You did your best, you approached the Vaishnava, you sincerely tried, but because of whatever reason, you weren't, then the only recourse is chanting after that.
And then you can.
But you have to go through that first stage first. Yeah, because otherwise, if we're not sorry for what we've done, there's two aspects of being sorry. I'm sorry for what I've done because I'm going to suffer for it. And then, better than that, I'm sorry for what I've done because I caused someone else some difficulty. That's the real sorriness. Both could be there, but if you're just sorry because, I'm going to get smashed. And still, you didn't think in terms of what discomfort you caused the other person. You're just thinking of the reaction. So that's why we apologize. Maharaj Ambarish, he was offended by Devasa Muni. He didn't take offense. Krishna did. And Krishna sent his chakra after Devasa. Devasa couldn't get away. He actually went to Brahmaloka, Shivaloka, and finally went to Vishnuloka. And Vishnu told him, and Narayana told him, sorry, I can't save you from my chakra. Only Ambarish Maharaj can save you. You go apologize to him. And he did, and then he was freed from that. So that's that story. It's in the 9th canto, 4th chapter. You can read that story. That illustrates how Krishna is helpless to save us from Vaishnava. Okay. So be careful. Conscious, cautious. Conscious of Krishna, cautious not to do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing. That's all. You remember these two words, consciousness and cautiousness. To be conscious and cautious. Little inattention. Just like in any, even when you're doing day-to-day life, if you're a little inattentive, it could cost you your life. There was an incident where Jai Dwaita Maharaj was talking to one good lady. They were standing on the curb right across the street. The girl started talking to Maharaj. She got a little inattentive and she just started to walk in front of a car. It was coming. Maharaj just grabbed her, pulled her back, saved her life. It wasn't for him, she would have been finished. She was a little inattentive, and she didn't think of crossing the street. But she did. So it's like that. Life is like that. If you're a little inattentive, something bad can happen, or something serious can happen. So in relationship with Vaishnavas, we get friendly. That's important. We should be friends with Vaishnavas, but we shouldn't be disrespectful. Even in friendship relationship, there's always should be respect along with the friendship. If we get too familiar and take each other's association as ordinary or cheap, then it's easy to commit offenses unknowingly. So, therefore, we value the association of devotees because in that association, everything you can aspire for in your spiritual life is available. And as soon as you lose that association, it's practically impossible to become Krishna conscious. So therefore, we value that association because it is the essence of our spiritual growth. So in valuing that, we have to value that each devotee is very special, no matter who they are or what there's, whether it's a new bhakta or, a guru, everyone's special. In that we may treat each other differently, but the element of respect has to be there. Although the respect may be shown in different ways. Yes.
You said value the association of devotees. How do you cultivate that?
By serving the devotees. Serving the devotees, making friendship with the devotees. Devotee is friendly by nature. We're friendly, we can be friendly with everyone, and we can develop friends with some people. You can't develop friendship with everyone. It's just not natural, but you can be friendly with everyone. See the difference? Because there are personality conflicts. It's just natural. There are certain personalities that go, it's just, there's no problem with the individual, it's just the personalities clash. So in that's why it says in Nectar Devotion, one should make friendship with like-minded devotees. Devotees who have similar natures, similar mentalities, you can develop friendship with. But you can be friendly to everybody. So both of these elements, and we should develop friendship because friendship is the basis of happiness in our spiritual practice. We have friends on the outside. Before we're devotees, we have friends for whatever thing we're doing. There's always people are doing the same thing, and we develop friendship. We get drunk together, right? Do other things, crazy things. We call it friendship, right? But then, we come into Krishna consciousness, we also develop friendships, but based on keeping Krishna conscious principles as the basis of that relationship. But you can't have friendship with everybody, but you can be friendly to everyone. There's a difference. Respectful.
There are also like three ways of relating which have been mentioned in Bhagavatam in different places, is that one should respect those who are higher in position to him, make friendship with those who are equal, be compassionate and merciful to those who are...
You got your little thing there?
Oh, I don't know what that was. Do you know?
Yeah, 4834.
4834.
Yeah. That's a real powerful verse. Through it's Narada Muni's statement to Dhruva Maharaj. These are little nice handy devices.
Gunadhikan mudam lipset, anukrosham gunadhamat, maitrim samanat anvichet, natapair abhibhujate. The translation is, every man should act like this. When he meets a person who is more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate towards him. And when he meets someone equal to him, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world.
Mm-hmm. Purport is interesting too.
Right.
Yeah, similar, but it gives the perverted reflection of that relationship, the materialist concept. Go ahead.
Purport. Generally, when we find someone more qualified than ourselves, we become envious of him. When we find someone less qualified, we deride him. And when we find someone equal, we become very proud of our own activities. These are the causes of material tribulations. The great sage Narad therefore advised that a devotee should act perfectly. Instead of being envious of a more qualified man, one should be jolly to receive him. Instead of being oppressive to a less qualified man, one should be compassionate towards him just to raise him to a proper standard. And when one meets an equal, instead of being proud of one's own activities before him, one should treat him as a friend. One should also have compassion for the people in general who are suffering due to forgetfulness of Krishna. These important functions will make one happy within this material world.
Hmm. So just by practicing that, one becomes free from the effects of the material energy. So that's a class in itself. That's the principle for relationship, that verse. Good. The mind. Oh. Okay, that's number six. One more thing on the mind. Just so Bhaktisiddhanta is famous for this statement. Prabhupada repeats it and writes it in different places in the Bhagavatam. He says that when you get up in the morning, beat your mind 100 times with shoes. And at night, before you take rest, 100 times with broomstick. So you want to know the understanding of that.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Well, there was one devotee. He used to beat his mind and head with shoes, but I think that's not the idea. The idea is when you get up in the morning, immediately fix your mind on Krishna, because at that time, if you let your mind go wild when you wake up, you will not be able to control it throughout the whole day. That time is very critical. So then the thing is, when we get up in the morning and pay our obeisances, think of Radha Giridhari when we get up, and then go on your duties and just chant. And then until you get to your beach, don't speak anything. Try not to speak anything in the morning before you get to the home. Don't even talk. Don't even say hello. It's just, I mean, that's maybe a little drastic. But the point is, you want to keep that mind controlled by controlling your speech. And then when you get to the holy name, then you can more or less the mind will be more controlled. So that's what it means. To beat the mind means to really control it by chanting the holy names. Because the mind in the morning and in the evening can cause havoc, those two times, especially.
There's a text by name of Manashiksha also, Instructions to the Mind.
That's Raghunath Das Goswami's verses.
I don't remember. He says,
there's one verse he says, when you indulge in criticizing others, your mind is like, that's it, it's like drinking donkey urine. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. He calls his mind, he says, my dear mind, when you indulge in such activities as finding fault with others, you are actually drinking the urine of a donkey.
That's more like hitting the mind with a shoe.
Yeah.
Saying these kind of things to the mind, that is something.
Yeah, so he's really, it's instructions for the mind, but it's also a little chastisement. So, but don't get too heavy with your mind. Because your mind will say, hey, who are you? I quit. Yeah. Then the other thing the mind will do is just quit. It's like it goes on strike. If you just beat it too much, then it just doesn't do anything. It's like a little kid, you know. You over-punish it, and it doesn't want to do nothing. So you have to, you know, control it through a little heaviness and a little sweetness. Like that. This devotee should laugh sometimes. It's healthy. It's healthy to laugh. If you're just like... I mean, of course, we don't laugh about anything. You want to hear a joke? Okay, I'll tell you a joke. All right, there's a Hindu man walking up. You sure you want to hear a joke?
Yeah.
There's nobody said yes, I know. There's a Hindu man, he's walking along the street, and he has a heart attack. He falls down. A crowd gathers around him. He's dying. A policeman comes and says, what's wrong? He said, I'm dying. They call an ambulance, but he's too critical to move. They can't move him. So the Hindu man, he's just about able to speak. He says, get me a Hindu priest. And so the police officer says, is there any Hindu priest here in the crowd? And one Jewish man comes forward. He says, and he said, I can help. The priest says, you're not Hindu, you're Jewish. He says, yeah, but I live next to a Hare Krishna temple. I know the prayers. I know the prayers. And the priest said, at least there's somebody here. Maybe this is not the best, but there's the only one. He said, I'll say the prayers. So he gets down to the man. He says, we like to thank Mr. Patel for his nice donation in sponsoring the Sunday feast.
Did it work?
That's a joke.
I don't know how many of you got the joke, but there's better jokes than that. Okay. Jewish joke. You would like to hear a Jewish? How many are Jewish here? Okay. Jewish joke. So two Jews are walking along. And one Jew says to the other, you know, the Christians, they have this sign out, convert to Christianity, and we'll give you $1,000. So his friend says, I'm not interested. He said, I'm going to go. I'm going to do it. He says, you go. So he goes and converts, and goes to Christianity. And then he comes back and he meets his friend. His friend says, did you convert? Yeah. He said, did you get the money? He said, that's all you people think of.
Oh.
You got it. You didn't get that one either.
You
got it?
He actually did convert.
No, he really converted.
He really did.
Okay. Love jokes. Yes?
Can devotees be too frivolous as, like, lack of mind control, too?
Huh?
Can devotees be too frivolous as exhibiting lack of mind control as well?
Yeah, you can get like that. When it becomes a feature of, okay, now here's the way we can enjoy. It should be natural. There are some devotees who like to joke around, but if it's done in the right way, there's nothing wrong. But it's not like you go around telling jokes all day or acting silly all day. No, you have to keep your mind focused on your devotional activities. But some devotees mistakenly think that I shouldn't laugh. Or I shouldn't be happy because it's against Krishna consciousness. Yeah, they're actually, in the old days, Krishna consciousness was lost like that. It's like, you have to be so serious, you know. Well, seriousness is what it's about. We're very serious. This is about making the solution to all problems in life. But Krishna needs There's so many pastimes for Krishna. Joking with the coward boys. Coward boys joking with Krishna. Lord Chaitanya used to joke with his devotees all the time. But it has to be done with taste. And not as a feature of, you know. Like, I'm trying to attract attention to yourself.
Others,
let's say. It shouldn't be false ego. Huh?
Yeah.
It should come naturally. I mean, with Ridhananda Maharaj, he's funny, right? He's definitely really funny. So, he's giving a class. I think it was in Boston. Prabhupada was also there. And the class was just roaring with laughter, one thing after another. So, Prabhupada was in the building. So at the end of the class, Ridhananda Maharaj is walking out. He told this story, so I know it's true. I heard it. He said, I was walking out, and Prabhupada's walking right towards me. And he's got a really grave, serious look on his face. And he said, I'm thinking, oh no, he's going to say, what a nonsense. Anyway, Maharaj stopped in front of Prabhupada, looked at him and smiled and said, it's very good you make the devotees laugh.
I have a comment on that. I think one person should not joke is one who cannot crack a joke on himself or take a joke on himself. So one should be able to himself to make joke of himself
or be able to take a joke on himself.
To be able to joke with others. Otherwise, one should not.
Yeah. You can't laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
We should laugh at ourselves because we think we're actually great and then we're not. Here's a joke. You want to hear? This is not a joke. One time we were preaching, and this was when we were in the New Vrindavan community. And so we were doing some radio programs, and reporter was traveling around with us, taking the stories. So the devotees at that time were growing some hair. So for the man said something. He said Hare Krishna. We said no, we're not Hare Krishnas. We're Hare Krishnas. And he was told a joke. So he said, oh, you guys have a sense of humor. And we said, yeah, Krishna has a good sense of humor, just look in the mirror. And that's the sense of humor. When you look in the mirror, that's Krishna's joke on you. Because you think, that's me. You're looking in the mirror, you're thinking, that's you. That's a joke. So Krishna's really funny.
Krishna once did a joke with Narad Muni also. Narad Muni wanted to go to some kind of swayamvar or some princess was going to choose a husband, and he wanted to become really handsome and beautiful to go there or something. And he asked Lord Vishnu to make him like that, and Lord Vishnu granted his wish, but Narad Muni did not know that he actually got a monkey's face or something like that. It's a story like that. And he's standing there, very confident that the princess is going to choose him. But she keeps on moving away from him. And he keeps on going there, standing in front of her, like, come on. You know, he was so confident that he got the most handsome look or something. I don't remember the whole story, but it was funny.
And that's pretty much it. We get up in the morning, we look in the mirror, and we take our first darshan. And then we smile at the deity. And then we comb the deity's hair if we have some hair. And then we bathe the deity and we take it out, give it some prasad, and then we take it on party ground so everyone can see the deity. It's like that self-worship. So it's like that. Everyone thinks I'm this body. That's the number one form of illusion, the misconception of thinking the body to be the self. We have a body, but we're not the body. And you get another body, you get many bodies in this life, as the soul as the body, you know, goes from different stages, you're getting brand new bodies. Every 7 years, actually, you get a brand new body. But we're thinking, you know, it's me. Or it's not me all the time, but it's me sometimes. But it's not. We are that driving force that gives life to the body. And that's the basic principle of spiritual philosophy. Without that, you can't understand higher knowledge. We have to at least have a strong theoretical understanding that I'm not my body. Realization will come through the process of practicing and chanting. But at least we should know. And therefore, in knowing, we give the body what it needs and not more. To think you're the body means to cater to the demands of the body. So therefore, in order to get away from that misconception, regulation in activities required. Not too much eating, not too much sleeping, not too little either. Don't neglect the body. And to keep it healthy and keep it going, but that's all. It's not like the body needs so many things. So it's a car. It's a good car, but it's still a vehicle. And the body is never alive and the soul is never dead. What gives the body life is the presence of the soul. As soon as the soul leaves the body doesn't function anymore. So what makes the body move and grow is the soul's existence within the body. And as soon as the soul leaves, the body is no longer useful. So people say, well, I love you. But you're loving what? That corpse? No. You're actually loving the soul that's in the body. But you can't see that. You're thinking I'm loving this body, but actually it's not. Because it's just dead matter, that's all it is. But it functions because of the presence of the soul. So love is actually spiritual. But people think are thinking otherwise. But nobody loves a dead body. Anyone can understand that. So as soon as the soul leaves, there's no real relationship with that body anymore. Okay, number 7, humility. This is the 7th key. 7th key means, humility means to not want the distinction to be praised by others, to be honored by others. Not looking for honor from anyone. Not expecting honor from anyone. That's humility. That's from Bhagavad Gita, from the 13th chapter, verses 8 through 12, in the purport. Humility is described. Humility means not wanting the distinction to be honored by others.
I'm on it.
Yeah. So, people think, well, I respect you, you should respect me. No. We give respect, and if someone respects us, that's nice. But if someone doesn't, the devotee doesn't think, oh, what's wrong? Doesn't expect it. You can accept someone else's respect, and you can appreciate that, and you can also be happy by it, but you should not expect it. That's the point. It's natural to be happy when someone respects you, and that's fine. But you shouldn't think, well, they're respecting me because they finally understood who I am. It's not like that. The respect may, if one is getting respect from others, one should think that person is, you know, it's their good quality. That somehow or other they can see something good in me, even though it's not there. That's the... Yeah, a devotee never thinks himself worthy of anything. But if something comes, he's happy. And if something doesn't, that comes, he's not disturbed. So Mandinam Mandadena, and giving respects to others. How is it possible to give respects to everyone when some people are just not respectable? It's obvious, right? Some people are just not respectable. Yes. Giridhari Prabhu, is it that's your name?
Giriraj.
Giriraj Maharaj.
I was going to say preach or the holy name.
Huh?
I was going to say preach, Krishna consciousness.
How to give respect to others by preaching Krishna consciousness?
One way
would
be
a way of developing respect for others.
One should be able to see the presence of the part and parcel of Supreme Lord in every living entity, and should be able to see that his external behavior is only because of his interaction with the modes, and that modes, that energy is of part of material energy is coming from Krishna, as well as the soul, which is part and parcel of Krishna as well.
Perfect. Couldn't have said it any better. Yeah, that's perfect. And that is the understanding that in the heart of all living entities is super soul is there. And everyone else, what qualities or lack of qualities is simply the interaction with the modes of eternal nature. But we respect people differently. It's not like you respect everyone the same way. You can't just come up to a little kid and say, "Hari Bol Prabhu. All glories, I offer my humble obeisances to you." Kid will look at you like, "Who are you?" You have to act according to a person's material position, but at the same time give proper respect and relationship to them. It's like we respect women by referring to women as mother. That's a sign of respect, that's a sign of honor. But to keep the consciousness on the mode of goodness. Yeah, so that has to be there.
And it also means to act in a way that would benefit the living entity and yourself. Because for the child, to offer respect is to act in a way that he will benefit in the highest possible way.
Exactly.
If you act in some other way, he will not benefit, and that, in one sense, is
disrespecting. That's disrespecting, to be an example or to act in such a way to benefit others. Wonderful point. Thank you. It's a wonderful point. Yeah, devotee's a well-wisher of everyone. He thinks of how to serve everyone, and therefore, even in chastising someone, if it's required and it can be done in a way that is obviously beneficial, then that's devotional service.
Yeah.
Sometimes the guru gets a little heavy with his disciples, and that's for their good. Sometimes a temple president or someone in charge may have to be a little strong with someone working under them. That's for their benefit, and for the benefit of the ashram. So that is also service. It's not what we say, acting outside of that. Good point. Do you have a point you wanted to say?
He said.
Okay, good. Humility. And someone gave a definition of humility that's been floating around ISKCON, which is really nice. Humility means not to think of yourself less, but to think less of yourself. No. Not to think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less. A person is always thinking about themselves. It's hard to be humble then, because your focus needs the center. So we think in terms of, well, what can I do to serve? What can I do to serve the devotees? What can I do to serve the Lord? So that's focusing on getting the focus off yourself. And then there's a person who's always thinking, what's happening to me? Why? What's not happening to me? This, that, and it's like, I'm the center. Why is this person acting like that? Why is this going on? What's this happening? I don't understand this. It's like me-centered. There's a little bit of me-centered in terms of how you should learn to do things, but ultimately you should do things. Serve. That's all. The happiest people are the people who are engaged in social service. If that's actually was a statistic in America, the materialistic society that is statistic, what are the happiest type of people? What are the qualities of a person that is happy? Two things. One is they're always busy and they're always serving others. But that's not bad for a materialistic statistic. So even people in the material world, when they try to do good for others and they're always thinking how to help others, they somewhat are happy, at least to some degree. When you focus on yourself all the time, what you're really doing is focusing on your mind.
Focusing on the real self is to focus on Krishna and others.
Yeah, exactly, because Krishna is the self of all selves. So as you focus on Krishna, you're actually focusing on your real self, because you're not disconnected. The disconnection is just an illusion. The best thing you can do for yourself is to serve Krishna. Service to Krishna is not... Krishna doesn't really... Krishna accepts our love, and that's bhakti. But ultimately, he doesn't need the service. We need to serve. Krishna likes when we serve him with love, because he takes the love and not the service so much. And that's the relationship. But in order to show love, we have to serve. In order to feel happy in life, we have to do things. Serve others, yes.
By serving others, we feel good about ourselves, we're happy.
Well, that's natural.
Isn't that selfish if I do that for that purpose?
Yeah, it is. If you're trying to get something from that, it is. It's like sometimes people give donations and they want to be known as a donation giver. So they won't give a donation or they won't do something unless they get some recognition from that. So even in a subtle way, a person could be what we call a do-gooder, and thinking that I'm a do-gooder. And then what does that do? That builds false ego. Because actually no one can do anything for anyone. Only God can help anyone. And God can use you as an instrument for his goodness towards others. So when you're serving others, it's actually God's mercy coming through you. And if you take credit for that, then you're blocking, you know, you're not giving credit where credit is due.
In other words, we do service.
We're happy with two things, with the activity and the fact that someone else has benefited from that.
And we know we're doing it for God. We're doing it with that purpose.
Exactly. And when you see someone else benefit by something you do, you feel happy.
Yes. And that just happened. That's not your intention.
Yeah. It's success. I want to cook something nice for you, and I cooked it, and you liked it, and you appreciated it, and that's my happiness.
Also, the example can be given like the hand, you know, it just does its duty to feed the rest of the body, and it gets nourished as well as a byproduct of of doing that service.
Exactly. That's the example that's used. That the part of the bodies are served, the body is served by different parts, but the parts benefit by service to the body. Yeah, same thing. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We're not separate. And when we serve Krishna by serving others, then Krishna is satisfied and we are satisfied. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Humility. What's another feature of humility? Humility means I can do anything with the mercy of Krishna, and I can't do anything without the mercy of Krishna. Humility empowers one to do great things, too. I mean, the example of Srila Prabhupada, what he did to spread this movement cannot be compared, but he never took credit. He was always depending on Krishna in all circumstances. That was proved by that famous poem, Markandai Bhagavad Dharma. When Prabhupada landed in Boston in 1965, he wrote this poem on the boat. He got off, he walked around, came back and wrote. He said, "My dear Lord, why have you brought me here? This is a horrible place. But you have some purpose for bringing me here. So please make this message of Sanatana Dharma, what's the word he used? Understandable to them. You can make it understandable to them. I am your puppet. Make me dance, oh Lord, make me dance. Make me dance as you want." So Prabhupada knew he came on a mission on the Lord, but at the same time he never thought, well, although I know this is a mission, I'm coming on my spiritual lesson, I'm coming on behalf of Lord Chaitanya. He also understood that his success was the mercy of the Lord. And that's true. If we always are aware that behind the scenes everything depends on the Lord, then we won't be less enthusiastic to do our service. Because we think I'm the doer, then we think I'm the enjoyer. And if I'm not going to enjoy, then why should I do it? That's a reason for not surrendering. I'm not going to surrender because I'm not the enjoyer. I'm the enjoyer, and I'm not going to enjoy this, so therefore why should I surrender? So the idea that I'm the doer means that when something goes well that I take credit, and then when I don't like it, I don't do it, therefore, because I think that it's meant for me. Follow? It's easy to understand. So we serve for the sake of service. We serve to sit for the to please. And that helps us get over the difficulty. Sometimes we're faced with difficult situations, but we know we should do it. And then we just think, I'm not doing it. If I'm doing it for myself, I wouldn't do it. But let me do it for Krishna. Let me do it for the devotees. Then it's easy. I mean, those of you who distribute books, sometimes it's difficult. You're out there, people are not so receptive, and you're thinking, what's the use? And then you think, well, let me do it for Krishna. And it's up to Krishna to inspire the people to take the book. I'll just do my best, that's all.
Prabhupada exemplified it too when he was in New York trying to open the first Radha Krishna temple and nothing was happening. I read one letter where he wrote, I don't care. I was for a while, he said, I was thinking about going back, but now I've decided, even if I have to try this until the end of my life, I'll keep on trying this.
Yeah.
Because at the absolute platform, success and failure don't matter, everything is the same.
Right, exactly. The success and failure is not within our capacity. Krishna says, Kamanik Varikadaste Mahfale Chukadanchana Mahfala Markamanta Mahate Kansaka Maste
Sangostu
Kamani. You have a right to perform your duty, but you're not entitled to the results of activities. Never be attached to the results of your activities, and never be not attached to doing your duty. So, do it. That's all. Okay, so humility. Any questions on humility, what it means? That verse, Trinadapi Sanichana Tayori Vasahishana, from the Shikshastikam prayers, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, quoting Srila Jiva Goswami, that this verse is an ornament. He says, string it on the necklace of the holy name and wear it as your ornament. So if we practice humility, practice it. Don't think, well, I don't feel humble, so I'm not going to be humble. I'll just be humble when I feel humble.
What about genuine and fake humility?
Huh?
Is genuine humility, like displayed by the Goswamis,
mm-hmm.
and then the fake humility, one way, one is thinking, everybody knows how humble I am.
If you think you're humble, that's another form of, I'm so humble, I'm proud of it.
Everybody knows I'm the most humble person. Something like
that.
I'm more humble than you.
No, it's not like that. And Humility is a feature of the soul's relationship with Krishna, so we can cultivate that mood and practice it. Practice the principles of humility. But don't ever think that you're so humble that you've made it. Because as soon as you think you make it, then you'll be tested. And you'll see you failed the test. Prabhu, didn't you see I was standing there and you walked right by me? You know, don't you know how humble I am? It's, you know, humility is something that is natural. It's not artificial. Some people, even from the materialistic perspective, they have a certain quality of humility. And that might be an advantage, but then you just have to bring it into Krishna consciousness. So personalities are different. Bring it into Krishna consciousness. That's all. Cultivate it. So, there's two things you should always remember and two things you should always forget. Two things you should always forget is, always forget all the bad things people have done to you. And that way you become, how would you say, free from, you develop forgiveness. What else? What quality else comes from that, forgetting all the bad things people have done? You become happy.
And also, you're able to tolerate because you're able to forget.
Develop tolerance. And one more thing. Yeah. And forget all the good things you've done for others. That's a little harder. Because you're thinking, you know, I did so many good things, therefore. Then you can become proud.
And also, you might develop some kind of attachment expectation or some result. Because I did something, you're expecting that now the other person is obliged to pay it back or something. If you're not expecting anything back, then you just throw it away, it's over.
Yeah, you have to be detached from all that stuff. Equipoised, even-minded. And the expectations are the opposite of simplicity. And simplicity is a feature of humility. To be simple, to be humble means to be simple. And to have expectations is the opposite of simplicity. A simple person, if you do something for them, they're so happy because they don't expect it. But a proud person, even if you do something, they expect it, they're not even happy. They just expect that it was supposed to happen anyway. So there's no happiness in it. So a humble person is always happy because they have no expectations, at least from the outside. They expect Krishna's mercy, that's the only expectation. Krishna will show me his mercy. So, two things you should always forget. Did you remember the two things you're supposed to forget?
Yeah. Forget all the bad things other people have done to you and forget all the good things you have done to other people.
And the two things you should always remember.
Krishna.
You should always remember the holy name, and you should always remember that death can happen at any moment. And that way one gets serious about spiritual practice. Yes, question. You had a question?
No.
A comment? Yes, Mom.
Wouldn't be a better option to, instead of forgetting the bad things that people might have done to you, wouldn't be better to remember those, but forgive? Because forgetting is sort of, to me, translates some type of ignorance. Because, the wrongs of people
you do
to us, or even wrongs that we do to other people, that's something that really we should learn from. I'd say is science.
Dad, explain your point.
Yeah, for example, well, we can pick any example, anything that someone might have done wrong to us. And especially if the person has done something like that repeatedly, then I know that's a pattern. So might be wise to maintain some distance from that person.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I'm not forgetting, but I'm forgiving.
Yeah, good point.
But it shouldn't develop enmity.
Yeah, and feelings in the heart.
Yeah, enmity. Yeah.
Is the act of just forgetting, is a sort of denial of an issue that maybe...
Well, we might use a better word, forgiving. Yeah. But forgive and then forget.
He
has another point. Your point is that if someone is acting consistently, you don't want to forget because you don't want to allow that yourself to fall into the same trap again, which can cause... If someone is causing offenses towards you, it's not good for them. So you may want to avoid the situation so that person doesn't commit offense.
Generally, to avoid destructive situations and circumstances, whether they're destructive of you or someone else or the environment.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes it's unavoidable, though.
Yeah.
If it is avoidable, you should do that. Devotees don't really like conflict. Devotees stays away from conflict. Conflict's for the materialists. You know, people like conflict because it just gets them out of their boredom. Devotees are not bored, so we don't have to look for conflict to get us out of it. Yeah, right? So, yeah. If you know someone is, you know, offensive or just, I don't know, maybe not offensive, but just, if you know something, if you do something or say something or be around that person, it's going to cause some problems, just avoid it. That's all. If possible. You know, and sometimes I see, you know, this. If I see a certain person I know is going to be very critical, is going to say something, I just, you know, I just disappear. Yeah.
I've also heard that if you don't, if you don't grow from a situation, if you just put off the growth, then Krishna will give you that challenge again in another way until you outgrow it. So,
yeah, but what
do you
mean to confront the situation and to somehow or other develop the qualities that are conducive to Krishna consciousness in that situation? Yeah, yeah, that's true. You'll be faced with the same thing until you actually somehow pass the test. Yeah, that's true.
So how do you balance that with avoiding situations that would create conflict? How do you balance the two ideas?
Well, when it's unavoidable. If it's coming by way of Krishna, then you can't avoid it. But if it's coming by way of circumstance, then you can avoid it.
I had a situation here once where some person who used to come here, it was not my fault, it's for, like you said, personality conflict. And no matter how much I tried to make sure everything was good between us, it was just not like that.
Yeah.
So all I did then is stop interacting, not because that I had an ill feeling, but because I thought...
If you say something nice to the person, it'll turn into something...
Exactly. So it was happening like that. Even if I wanted to make friends or be respectful, it was still not working.
Yeah,
so I decided I don't want to be... generate an ill feeling in my heart.
People like that.
Do any offenses.
Yeah, they'll just take whatever you do and turn it into something else. Yeah. Even if you have the good intentions. So therefore you just avoid it.
Yeah, I just wanted to keep my heart things. I just decided not to interact with that.
I know an example like that too. So, person just, even if you're nice to them, something will go wrong. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I just have one example I remember.
It's just the way it is. Because they're not at peace with themselves, they can never be at peace with others. That's all.
We need a little time to we need to make a few preparations before 6
Okay, I'll tell one little quick story. Okay, this is how misunderstandings come by way of circumstance. A guest, a very respectable, important guest, came to the temple. Prabhupada was there. Prabhupada turned to a devotee who was with him, get him some prasadam. The devotee went into the pujari room to get some maha prasadam. Pujari said, I just put the offering on the altar. It'll be off in 15 minutes. You can have it then. The devotee came back out, said, Prabhupada, the offering's on the altar. We have to wait. Prabhupada said, get it now. He went back in. The pujari was chanting his Gayatri after he made the offering. He walked right past the pujari onto the altar, picked up the deity's plate, and came off and brought it to Prabhupada. As he was walking off the altar, the pujari was furious. And so he came after the devotee. They both wound up in Prabhupada at the same time. So, now, the pujari obviously is getting angry about this at this devotee. The devotee is acting in relationship to an instruction. So, what is that? Simply a misunderstanding. That's all. So these things do happen. They do happen. And a lot of conflicts come by way of misunderstanding. We just don't understand another person, or we just don't take time to understand, or we just somehow or other circumstances cause some, what we say, lack of communication, and people misunderstand even though there was no ill intent. So sometimes you find yourself in those circumstances, but try to avoid them. Therefore, devotees always very cautious and careful to do things in the best possible way, to avoid even circumstantial misunderstandings. But they happen, right? They happen. Even husband and wife. You don't understand me. Oh, you don't understand me. And it's like that. They don't. They don't take time to understand each other.
Is it also because many times, most people, we don't understand ourselves. We need to have a real core understanding of who we are.
Yeah.
Before we try to understand others. And most of the conflicts come because we don't think to introspect who we are and become grounded in that.
Mm. Yeah, but try to understand others, and you'll help you understand your own self too. Because part of our understanding ourselves is to understand our relationship with others. Because really, we become complete in a relationship, not simply being by ourselves. We have our personalities and we have our characters. Then we should understand to some degree how we function best.
What do we do if someone's kind of asking for our opinion or perspective, but we know from past experience that they're not really going to be happy with what that is because it doesn't fit with their image of things?
They're asking, but it's not.
It's going to hurt them. It's going to cause.
You should warn them before you say it. Say, you sure you want to hear?
I think in those conversations sometimes I'm thinking they're going to convince me of their perspective.
We'll give them a little, what we say, preview of what you're about to tell them.
Okay.
And then if they're still ready, and say, don't blame me, you asked for it. But then you have to kind of like give it to them in the sweetest possible way, and not like say, well, okay, since you asked, yes, you are a nonsense. No. Not like that. And you have to kind of make it nice. If you watch Satchinandana Swami preach, he's so sweet, but so heavy. He can really cut right through you. But when you listen to him talk, he's so sweet. He presents the heaviest philosophy in the sweetest way. Yeah, there's many devotees like that, but I notice that he has this certain feature. It's really super sweet, but also it's very heavy. So we have to be able to do that.
Yeah. I'm cutting super close. were actually.
Are you being very direct with me now?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but
he's telling me in a very sweet way. Thank you. Yes, we can end right now because I respect temple schedules. Okay, so there's a program at 7 tonight.
So no, we're doing 15 minutes.
Yes. Oh, so that's at 6.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Srila Harinam Sen Kirtan
Ki Jai.
See you all tomorrow.